Welcome to the resurrection of DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University, and I'm your host, Bill Geist. In the first decade of this millennium, DMOU was an innovative teleseminar series featuring in-depth interviews with the best and the brightest in the destination marketing space. Well, today, DMOU is back as a podcast and a new format, three questions and a bonus round. Some of these podcasts may go 15 minutes, some could go 45, we just don't know, and that's going to be the fun part of bringing DMOU back. And this episode is sponsored by 26 Digital, a full-service agency that offers integrated marketing solutions exclusively to the destination marketing organization field, as well as members of the travel, tourism, and hospitality industries. Dave Serino, Brian Mattson, and the 26 team assist DMOs with developing measurable and successful digital marketing strategies through specialized solutions to elevate the overall understanding, strategic direction, and tactical implementation of impactful campaigns. You can learn more at 26digital.com. And now on to our show. Our guest today is Bill Baker. He is the place strategist for Axia Creative, based in Portland, Oregon. He has created brand and tourism strategies for hundreds of locations, including coastal resort towns, small desert communities, eclectic neighborhoods, rural villages, ambitious small cities, and countries. He is known internationally for his practical and instructive approach and the wealth of experience, creativity, passion, and humor that he brings to his work. He was directly involved in some of Australia's most respected international campaigns in the USA and Europe for more than a decade. He also produced tourism strategies for the Sydney 2000 Olympic Games and has been asked to provide strategic counsel to destinations around the world, including Hong Kong, Guam, India, Macau, and Saudi Arabia, as well as Australia's global branding and integrated marketing campaigns. Bill has been interviewed by CNN, NPR, The Travel Channel, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, New Yorker, Forbes, Inc., USA Today, and many other leading international outlets. He is widely published and is the author of the brand new book, Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns. Bill Baker, welcome to DMOU.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here.
It's great to have you back on after all these years, and congratulations on the new book. Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns is just out, and having penned a couple of books myself, I know what a labor of love these can be. So tell me, how hard was it to finally say it's done and send it off to the printer?
Well, my first challenge, Bill, was actually starting to do it again, and I was getting pressure from various distributors and other people out there looking for the new book, and there wasn't one. And so I finally decided to start it. And when I did start it, it was an unexpected journey. It wasn't just a rehash of what I'd done in the past, that I found that the earth was starting to change underneath DMOs, the way places go about presenting themselves, the kinds of players at the table, the kinds of disciplines place branding had to follow. So it called for a total refresh in many ways, but still many of the principles that were in the first still have to underpin the way you go about branding today and no doubt into the future.
Well, and we'll get to that evolution of what we are and why the book was not just a refresh, but really a retelling, and a whole bunch of new ideas and new case studies, which I really enjoyed as I went through the book. All right, let's get to your first question. Consumer brand expert Marsha Lindsay of Lindsay Stone & Briggs and the founder of BrandWorks University has often said that a brand is the executive summary of a product or experience. Now, for those who think that a brand is a logo or a tagline, give us your executive summary of the design and deliverables of a true place branding process.
Well, firstly, let's start at that basic premise that a brand for us is a valued promise. It's not just a promise. It's got to be valued and meaningful to the target audiences. But the other part of that equation is that it has to be able to be delivered and consistently and sustainable over time. So what we're talking about is that a brand being a valued promise that has to be delivered. And that calls for it to be much more than a logo and a tagline, or if I could also add, more than a campaign. And time and again, we see in the media, the travel media, about a new brand campaign. More than often, it's a state that may be saying it, and it's really a campaign. It's not a brand. The brand hasn't really been defined in many cases. So a place brand strategy has to have a strong foundation. It has to be strategic. It's not just about aesthetics and designs. We regard the brand strategy as being a strategic guidance system. And because it's not just a promise of what you're saying, it also has to be delivered. It's multi-purposed. And it has to be able to provide guidance, not only for communications, but also for how it's going to be delivered as well, and engaging a vast variety of stakeholders. Another way of looking at a brand strategy, we kind of regard it as priority management. You know, it's hard to draw the line between a Starbucks or a McDonald's and place branding, but how do you think these organizations, these corporates, develop their brand? It's by priorities. They know what they are, they know what they're not, and what they don't want to be. And so it helps them establish their priorities. And accordingly, for a destination, they should also be following in a similar vein, where it's helping them set priorities. And extending that further, you've got a lot of stakeholders out there who you have to bring on side to help. So it also involves a big dose of change management and getting part, oh, this is the way we've always done it. You have to try and move a vast majority of stakeholders beyond that, and then hopefully sustain it into the future. As for the process, Bill, it has to be collaborative, involving to the greatest extent possible, just sounding the temperature of residents and their feelings and perceptions of their city and their aspirations for it, involving partners. Also researching externally on competitors and what your external consumers, their needs and how they perceive the place to be as well. So you've got that mix that is there, then filtering it and defining the brand through some strong positioning and getting that promise right that you're going to be able to consistently convey and deliver to your target audiences. At that time, you're also wanting to really put your finger on what is the DNA of this place? What's its special sense of place? And that is something that you want to be able, if you can, to convey that through tourism, through economic development, and through a myriad other stakeholder contact points to get them to rally behind that brand. So it's more than communications and messaging. It has to be also about product development. And you need that part of the equation in the strategy as well. So we know what you're going to say about yourself, but what are the steps that you may have to take as a community to consistently be able to deliver that? And part of the strategy needs to be looking at the adoption. Who are those people we need to bring on side within the community or even outside the community? And what do we want them to do? That helps tie up both sides of the communication and the delivery equation.
So to put the fork, hopefully the last time, into this whole concept of logo and brand, could you go as far as saying that you could collaboratively with stakeholders and research and everything that goes into your 7A process, could you say, or maybe you have, could you say that a brand can exist without a logo or a tagline?
I just sense, Bill, that looking at the way things are developing with the importance now of cell phones and the small space that you have to work with on there, that the logo of the past with all of its flourish and nuance inside of it is starting to disappear, and that more and more places are moving towards some form of logo type, where there's a form of font or a signature that is very distinctive, that they're using that. And that's much more versatile rather than using a full logo that incorporates some form of symbol. The symbol is starting to go, not in all cases, but increasingly in those cases. As for the tagline, one of the challenges we like to throw to our clients is, how are people going to know what your brand is without seeing your logo and tagline? It's a real test for them to really think about the kind of words they're going to use, the imagery, the products, how they're going to have, again, those priorities. What are those priorities that are going to come to the fore so that you take the weight off needing a logo to say what your brand is? Now, with the tagline, yeah, there's some clients that haven't used one. One of those is the Yakima Valley in Washington State. where John Cooper there decided he didn't want one because it was going to be too distracting from the brand process. And so it worked out very, very well for him. And visit their website, you've got absolutely no doubt what their brand is about without needing a tagline.
Yeah, it's interesting. As far back as the early 90s, we attempted to do it with Madison, Wisconsin. And as you know, Bill, the more diverse the offerings of a community, the more difficult it is to get your hands around what is the brand essence. And we finally, after months, just looked at each other and just gave up. We dropped all taglines. We found the right font for the time and just put Madison in capital letters with an exclamation point. And that was it. Because we couldn't go any further than that.
Yeah. But underneath that, Bill, did you know who you were as a community?
Yeah, I think we did know who we were, and I think we still to this day know who we are. I think it's the articulation that has always been difficult in this community. And also because we are a very, very, Madison is a very vocal community and not shy of expressing opinions. And so no one opinion and no one self-image story could ever gain purchase, I guess, was what our problem was. And we wanted all those voices as part of the process. And if we had picked one or the other, then we would have disenfranchised people. So we're going too deep into the Madison story, but I do think we knew who we were, and I think we still do. In fact, it's funny, I'll continue on the Madison rant. They tried again a decade or two later to get the brand right, and it was Marsha Lindsay, who I referenced at the top of this question, was running that process. And I saw her out and about one day, and I had been on the road for like a month, almost straight. And I said, Marsha, I said, I got it. I got the brand. And she just kind of giggled and she goes, okay, fine. Tell me what the brand is. I said, every place I go, people go, where are you from? And I say, Madison. And they go, oh, cool town. Have you ever been? No, but I've heard it's a cool town. Everybody says that about Madison, whether they've been here or not. Now that's not the brand, but it definitely gets to who we are. We're a hip urban college town on lakes, you know, with a lot to do.
Right. Well, the important thing is what were you conveying? Were you conveying and communicating that it was a cool town? Were you doing that consistently?
They are now. I don't think we were then.
And was it deliverable as a cool town?
And yeah, the answer on that one is yes.
Yeah. And so by default, and this is what very often happens, is that you don't necessarily have to create a brand. You have to reveal a brand of something that is already there. And you had it intuitively. You knew what it was. It was differentiating. It was working. It was sustainable. It was able to help you develop new products and new investments and things like that. And what was missing was the collaboration on maybe a logo, and maybe a tagline was getting in the way of you having a unifying brand. So it's nothing to trip yourself up over in not having a tagline, and that you can leave it up to many of your communications and such to convey really what you are about.
Yeah. You intimated in the discussion about the new book that it had to be a whole new book. It couldn't be a refresh because things are changing. So here's question number two. With the growing realization that the landscape of destination marketing is evolving into much more than just tourism, how does place branding adapt? What do we need to do differently that maybe we weren't doing when the first book came out?
Even if we take branding out of this equation, Bill, and have a look at the ecosystem in which DMOs are now having to operate, it's even different to how it was 7 years ago. So you have those dynamics at play. But what I was also noticing was on a wider scale that there's a closer relationship forming between tourism and economic development. There's a greater realization that it's no brain science, we've known this for years, is that the livability of a place is attractive to new residents, which then is attractive to talented workers, which is then attractive to industries and businesses to invest in those communities. And tourism is directly related to the livability of a place. So that was working there as well, as is the whole issue of community pride and how they're feeling, and how in some cases they are to the level of tourism they're wanting in their cities and future growth as well. So those things were coming through, and also part of it is increasingly the involvement of what we might call placemaking, where it's urban designers, architects are starting to become more and more involved. That might be in the design of the public square or streetscapes or greater, more vegetation or wayfinding signage throughout the city. And all of those are directly related to the deliverability of your brand. It might not be your brand, but they're part of the stage. They're part of the backdrop to whatever performances you're going to be putting on in your community to attract people to that area. And no matter what people may come to your city for, it's more than likely at some stage they're going to wander away from where you were expecting them to be, and maybe in downtown or along thoroughfares you didn't expect. And all of those things impact their enjoyment of the place, its sense of place, and whether people would recommend it to other people. So all those things are starting to be at play. Along with another issue of authenticity, and increasingly we are becoming more discerning. Been there, done that, and people want things that are more genuine, where they may be able to immerse themselves in the local culture, the local society in a sense, and it's distinctive and it's different, and it doesn't have streets and architecture that are just made out of head office and sent to communities around the country, particularly national chains and things like that, where places are starting to get developments more in sync with the local community and the local feel and the local sense of place. So it's highly likely, or I know it's happening, particularly it's happening in Europe, is that in-place branding, you're just as likely to find architects, urban planners, real estate developers at the table for place branding as readily as you may find tourism and economic development marketers. So the applications of these principles are becoming more widespread than just for tourism and destinations. Hence, also the name change of the book from destination branding to place branding to reach wider and accommodate more of those changes. So, you know, in conclusion, Bill, I think that where we're heading for this, and I think where we're heading in DMOs anyway, is that they're needing a bigger table and a genuine place brand, because, again, going back to our original comments about it being something you communicate, a promise that you communicate, but also delivery. And it's that delivery that is going to get more and more attention and integrating that all together, so that the communications are not separated from the delivery process as well, that everybody is starting to talk in how the place delivers its experiences. And so I see many bigger tables are going to be needed to get everyone's voice and heading in a unified direction.
Yeah, it's interesting. As long as the two of us have been in this industry, when we both got in, we were desperately, as destination marketing organizations, trying to find our way onto that table. And I think today we realize that that table needs to have us at the table.
Yes.
That the roles are really reversed. What? It should be the community, the city, the county, the state, the region that is, you know, beating a path to our door.
Right.
Because we now realize that the work that we do just opens the door for economic development, quality of life, all of the things that are the important aspects of a vibrant tourism economy.
And Bill, it's not just, say, at the local government level where it's the elected officials who are involved. It's the actual managers who may be involved in developing new precincts and designing new streets and parking and things like that. Is that at that level, at the functional level, there needs to be, you know, greater communication as well.
Great point. So question number three, I know that all of your children are good looking, but give us an example of one of your client destinations that really understood and followed your lead and nailed their brand. And then if you can or will, give us one of your most challenging projects.
It's a very difficult question, Bill. They're asking me to choose between the children. But let me go and your parents would tactfully choose your older children, of course. Let me point the finger toward longevity. And I think this is the true test of the quality of a brand. And not only the brand, but the management of the brand, which I think at times is more important than the creative initiative that they may have been in the first place. The place that I'll cite is the one that I've just already mentioned, was the Yakima Valley in Washington. And I think you know John Cooper there.
Very well.
We worked with John 12 years ago, and John had just moved into that area. The Yakima Valley is a large area. It's, I think it's something like about 70, 80 miles long. It's pretty large. It has about 120 wineries there. It had at that time five cities, and that's how they were marketing themselves essentially as five cities. It wasn't unified in their presentation at any time, and it produces more than half of the grapes in Washington State. It's an abundant producer of fruit and vegetables, and so the brand there was, again, I just said we didn't have a tagline, but the essence of the place was built around fun with food and wine. And again, no tagline because that was going to be distracting. And I think that was a very smart move on John's behalf. What's been great to see is that the essence of that brand has been retained over 12 years. And that's through many political cycles, many funding cycles, all kinds of different distractions and points that get challenged over the years. And this is the great challenge for all destinations. It doesn't matter what your brand is to start out with, the infrastructure, the knowledge of knowing how to go about sustaining that brand is vital. And they've done a terrific job. So it's involving strong leadership, consistency. And if you don't have those things over time, the brand is doomed. It's not going to last. And the great thing with Yakima Valley is that it has worked over that long period. Again, it wasn't just communicating, and they've adjusted and tweaked and stayed on trend in many ways with the way colors work and the style and things like that. But underpinning it is also a focus on product development and delivering on that promise and working through grants, consultation with local cities and placemaking and feedback loops with wineries and such, keeping the product fresh and innovative as well. So it's almost like there has to be a direct link with something else we're hearing more and more about with DMOs, and that is master planning. So that what's mm-hmm. the master plan trying to build? What do you want to be in future? It's your brand. And so there has to be a link. So in many of the projects we've worked on, we've probably over-delivered a great deal in providing some of the framework for what that master plan should be, because it's not just about communications. And you're asking about more challenging things. It's when things get wedded to communications, they become politicized, become distracted, they become untethered from the reality of the place and the kinds of product development initiatives that should be coming forward from there. So in the end, with the Yakima Valley, I think that the important things there have been focus. They've stayed true to the brand, consistency, and leadership and management over time.
So time for the bonus round, my friend. Some people know that you were involved in one of the most iconic tourism brands in history. It was the famous Paul Hogan Shrimp on the Barbie campaign that really introduced North America to Australia. But I am way more interested in the story that I've heard only rumored before, that you actually dressed up in a kilt and played bagpipes in public. Do tell.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Yeah. Hey, Bill, if you give up this gig in tourism, you could also always go into political opposition research.
Absolutely.
You'd do very well there. I'm guilty, Your Honor. And let me reverse the things that you said.
Okay, bagpipes and a kilt.
So my mother insisted that I had to stay close to our Scottish roots. And I was just at this age in I just started high school, and she insisted that I had to go and learn the bagpipes, which I went along because I wasn't quite old enough to say no. And so I went along, started learning. Then the time came when I could actually play in the band. And so we had to march down the main street of the city, a large city, with the band. And as it turned out, I'm marching along there in the kilt, and we turn the corner, and who's there but a huge crowd of kids from the school. And so I got the catcalls and whistles and everything else. I went home and told my mother that I wasn't going anymore, and so I took up cricket instead. There's one photograph, Bill, this is in the pre-digital age, most definitely, and so there's one photograph under lock and key of me with the bagpipes in the kilt. So maybe we can...
I will have to find a way to get that, digitize it, and put it on your episode announcement.
Yeah, that would be terrific, wouldn't it?
Well, that's
all I am pleading guilty to.
And the statute of limitations has passed on everything else you've done, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Hey, Bill, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule for the podcast. Always fun when we get together, and hope we can again real soon, either on another edition of DMOU or somewhere down the road in one of the far-flung places. And talk about far-flung. I was thinking about this the other day. We met for the first time in Monaco.
Exactly.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Very, very.
Yeah, of all the places we were going to meet, we met. Yeah, we met at Monaco, I think at MPI. That was just years ago. Anyway, thank you and congratulations again on a great new book, Place Branding for Small Cities, Regions, and Downtowns. It is out now and it is available on Amazon.com. Bill, thanks so much.
Thanks a million, Bill. Much appreciated.
That's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers that we are back and looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website, innovative ways to tell people where to go. 2-6 Digital, a full-service agency that offers integrated marketing solutions exclusively to destination marketing organizations and members of the travel, tourism, and hospitality industries, has been this episode's sponsor. Dave Serino, Brian Mattson, and the 2-6 team assist DMOs with developing measurable and successful digital marketing strategies. You can find them at 26digital.com. DMOPros.com is where you'll find more on our services to the DMO world, plus links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more, as well as links to earlier episodes of DMOU. That is DMOPros.com. Executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time.